நாராயணம் நமஸ்கிருத்யா நரம் சைவ நரோத்தமம் தேவிம் சரஸ்வதிம் வியாசம் ததோ ஜயம் உதீரயேத். ஷுண்வதாம் ஸ்வகதஹ கிருஷ்ணஹ புண்யஶ்ரவண கீர்த்தனஹ ஹ்ருதயந்தோஸ்தி அபத்ராணி விதூனோதி சூஸ்ததாம். Translation: Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, super soul in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So the next verse: Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So these are two verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, and both these verses are describing stages in sadhana bhakti. Last night we gave a general overview on obstacles that devotees face, and we reached a conclusion very clearly that we don't face many obstacles in the mode of goodness. Our obstacles are in the mode of passion and in the mode of ignorance. And there is a necessity for devotees to position themselves in goodness. And this positioning themselves in goodness could take lifetimes. Please don't misunderstand me. It can take lifetimes for us to position ourselves. But because there is mercy from Lord Chaitanya and from Srila Prabhupada, this can happen in a very short, condensed manner. This is very important. This is very important for us to understand. Why would it take lifetimes? If one were to follow the natural evolutionary cycle of going from ignorance to passion ignorance, passion ignorance to passion, passion to goodness, as it would be in Vedic society, one moves from being a Shudra to a Vaishya, Kshatriya to a Brahmana, it can take lifetimes to achieve that particular conditioning where we develop the sense for austerity and we develop attachment for austerity, which is the wealth of the Brahmana. The Brahmana has wealth, and that wealth comes from austerity. So when the Brahmana goes out and he is asking for alms, you see, we read in Shastra that the Brahmanical way is for us to go and then beg, and then they take whatever is available on that particular day. This can happen only in Vrindavan. Yeah, you try anywhere else and they'll call the cops, they'll call the police, but you try in Vrindavan, and then they go inside the house and they make fresh roti and they bring and they give us for alms. The point I want to just convey is, the Brahmana has performed austerities. Austerities are the wealth of the Brahmana. The Brahmana is situated in the mode of goodness. It is easy to create wealth in the mode of goodness. Wealth would come quite easily. It would come quite easily. Desires would fructify quite easily. Someone who is in the mode of goodness has the ability to accumulate wealth quite easily because they have the ability to preserve, they have the ability to use their skills. The Brahmana in those days, they used to approach a king. We read about it in Srimad Bhagavatam. The king would very readily and heartily give big donations to the Brahmana. Why would he do that? Why wouldn't he object to the Brahmana saying, you're unqualified, you're beggars, why are you coming into my kingdom? Why are you asking me for alms? Why should I give you? In Bhagavatam, you read throughout the Bhagavatam that the Brahmana receives thousands of cows in donation. The Brahmana receives jewelry. The king is ready to give even a small kingdom to the Brahmana. Why do we read this? It's because the king, the Vedic king, who is educated in Vedic knowledge, understands that the Brahmana is not asking for anything that belongs to the king. The Brahmana has accumulated piety. That piety is subtle wealth. Before you make your euros and your pounds and your dollars, it has to accumulate as subtle wealth. The Brahmana has accumulated subtle wealth as piety. He is going and giving blessings. He is giving the piety in his pious reactions to the king. He is blessing the king. Your kingdom will remain uninterred. Your kingdom will have prosperity. You will be living long. You would have many sons and you would be happy. He is giving his piety in the form of blessings to the king. The king is receiving piety because the king does not have much capacity for piety. Because he doesn't perform austerities. He's not sitting down and going through Shastric revelation. He's not doing any sadhana. The king is doing some, but not to the extent to which the Brahmana does. So the Brahmana is basically giving what he has accumulated in piety to the king, and the king is giving him hard cash. Does it make sense? This is how it works. There's no begging. The Brahmanical position does not involve begging. It involves being able to bless others with things which they don't have, and as a consequence, if they're cultured, they would return the favor by giving exactly what is required. So reaching the mode of goodness means having wealth. Being wealthy, that is the reason why it is said austerity is the wealth of the Brahmanas. It is wealth, because he has the ability to bless others with prosperity. If the Brahmana has the ability to bless others with prosperity, why would he suffer? So we are a Brahmanical society. We need to strategize for the mode of goodness. That is our strength. It is required for us to move forward, and it is also required for us to comfortably exist and be able to move forward. This is our strength. We cannot imitate the world. So we need to have a strategy to remain in goodness for the next 50 years. If you're 20, you're literally talking about a 50-year haul. It's not short term. You're not in a 100-meter sprint. This is a marathon. Please understand that this is a marathon. You need to be able to sustain yourself for 40, 50 years. And as a consequence, if there isn't a strategy, there isn't a plan, and if there isn't clarity in terms of what it is which I require to remain in the mode of goodness, what should I do and what should I not do? If this desire is not there in the heart to be situated in a perfect condition for devotional service, it won't happen. Why would something happen without us desiring? This is a very important consideration. Now this verse here, text 17, is very clear. It says, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is Paramatma in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages. How does one develop the urge? It is said here that we come into devotional service with contaminated desires. It's a fact. We're going to talk about it quite extensively now. How does one develop the urge? The urge is developed by coming in touch with someone who has a very deep urge. If you come in touch with someone who has deep urge and, you know, they have the great ability for them to be able to hear, their faith has the ability to give us faith. They carry faith in their hearts. When they see us and we serve them nicely, they take their faith and give it to us in our hearts. How does this happen? Sri Guru? Yeah. Sri Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chittete Koryakya. The chitta is completely cleansed of all kinds of impurities by coming in touch with the sound vibration of the realized spiritual master. When we hear that, it goes into our ears, it destroys our ignorance and establishes a desire to hear. We don't have that qualification. Someone who is very greedy for devotional service, someone who is experiencing deep attachment to Krishna, has deep faith. They have the ability to gift that faith through their vani, through their words and the sound vibration that can enter into our ears and shatter our ignorance. Sri Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chittete Koryakya. This is the way to establish faith. Faith is established by coming in touch with the faithful, by remaining in touch with the faithful. Faith is established by hearing from those who have experienced. When the guru is giving mantra, when the guru is giving the beads after chanting during initiation, the guru's realizations are a part of the initiation process. The sambandha gyan, the guru's understanding of his sambandha with Krishna, comes into our heart when he is giving the beads. When the guru is initiating us into the mantra, his understanding is coming through the mantra. This is initiation. He is already establishing faith. He is saying, this is my understanding of my sambandha with Krishna. I'm going to take your hand, I'm going to place it in Krishna's hands. This is the guru's business. So coming in touch with the faithful, coming in touch with the spiritual master, hearing the spiritual master destroys ignorance. This is the verse, which essentially means that the Bhagavatam is recognizing that those who come in touch with Srimad Bhagavatam, those who come in touch with Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness could be contaminated with material desires. They are not expecting pure devotees. We don't recruit pure devotees. We are distributing Harinam on the streets and we are bringing in everyone. It is an expectation of Srimad Bhagavatam that there will be problems. They are not assuming that there's going to be no problems. They are assuming there will be problems, and they're giving us a solution here. Now, let's go into the next verse and then we will start the purport. By regular attendance in classes on Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. They are not saying completely destroyed. They are saying almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto this personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. The prior verse and this verse talk about two distinct stages in the life of a devotee. We are going to talk about it today. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jastejase Avir Bhava Vajranaka Vajradam Shrakarmasayan Randaya Randaya Tamo Grasa Grasa Om Swaha Abayam Abayam Atmani Bhushtaha Om Shraum. Namo Namo Aniruddhaya Hishikesha Indriyatmane Namaha Paramahamsaya Purnaya Nibhutatmane Swargapa Vargadvaraya Nityam Suchisade Namaha Namah Hiranya Viryaya Chaturhotraya Tantave. So, the first verse is talking about Anishtita Bhakti. What is Anishtita Bhakti? What is Anishtita? Anishtita is unsteady devotional service. Anishtita is unsteady devotional service. The first verse is talking about people who are going to come in and they're going to have problems because they have material desires, and these material desires are going to cause unsteady devotional service. Anishtita bhakti. Up and down, unsteady. And when they are talking about things in the Srimad Bhagavatam, please understand, they are not referring to one lifetime. They are practically talking about a timeline for the existence of the soul. For the soul to evolve, it is taking a timeline, and this timeline is being spoken of. So we don't need to assume that it is one lifetime. We need to assume that all of this can take many lifetimes, but we need to be greedy enough to resolve everything in one lifetime. If we don't plan, it can take many lifetimes. If we plan and execute, then it can be resolved very easily. This is very simple. It can take many lifetimes. So, the devotee who is coming into devotional service is displaying anishtita bhakti. It is said here, bhaktir bhavati naistiki, which is the next step. If you practice devotional service after establishing faith in the heart and then executing devotional service and following the instructions of the spiritual master, then you establish devotional service in the heart with firm faith. And that is nishtita bhakti. It is said here, bhaktir bhavati naistiki. Naistiki bhakti, nishtita bhakti is steady devotional service. The first verse is talking about unsteady, the next verse is talking about steady. So there are two distinct stages. We need to understand both stages. Now, what happens when it becomes steady? What is the outcome? That is given in the next particular verse, which is 19. Tada rajastamo bhavaha kamalobadayasche cheta ether anabiddham sthitam sattve prasiddhati. Sthitam sattve prasiddhati. Rajastamo bhavaha. This is the third verse. First, someone comes with unsteady devotional service. They have material desires. Their heart is filled with contaminations of passion. Heart is filled with ignorance. The next stage is naistiki bhakti. That ignorance and passion for most part is removed. But there is still some problem with the heart. There is still some contamination. In the third verse, it is very clearly said, Tada rajastamo bhavah kamalobadayasche Cheteter anabiddham sthitam sattve prasiddhati. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effect of nature's mode of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. This completely happy state is complete freedom from passion and ignorance. This is pure goodness, shuddha sattva. This is called the Vasudev platform. The Vasudev platform is where the devotee is able to have direct experiences of Krishna. He is qualified for direct experiences of Krishna by Krishna's desire and the desire of the pure devotee. Now the service begins in understanding their eternal swarup. They begin understanding, this is who I am. They now are beginning to realize in small pieces of information that I live in such and such village in Vraj. They know which street in Vraj they live in. They know the name of their parents. They now know that they have siblings in Braj, and these are their names. They know where they have to do their service. They know who is going to guide them on the service. This information starts developing once they cross into the Shuddha Sattva platform, because they start realizing who they are in full. Yes, we are not of this world. We belong to Braj. We have parents, we have siblings, we have service. We have an identity which has already been established, and we are slowly proceeding towards that identity. That is our process. This is an extraordinary opportunity. Yeah, this is an extraordinary opportunity for permanently establishing ourselves in connection with Krishna. In this lifetime, we are very fortunate that we have come together. There's something wonderful that we may have done or not done. We may not have done something bad for us to be assembled in the movement of Lord Chaitanya. There's something extraordinary. 100%. Every devotee is fortunate. They have come here because there's something extraordinary about them. Every devotee. I just want to relate a very small story of how Srila Prabhupada used to treat devotees, or he used to understand the presence of devotees. There was a Bhakta John. He was a Bhakta in New York City back in 1966-67, during the early days when the group was small. And Srila Prabhupada started traveling then to San Francisco, to Europe, later in 67-68. So this Bhakta John, he was quite eccentric. He was not normal. He had mental issues. So his behavior was very erratic. He never could sit in a class properly. He would interrupt class. He would do certain things. And he was a bit erratic. He was also experiencing issues with the mind right in front of the devotees. The devotees knew that he had problems. So Srila Prabhupada, he never discouraged him. He always used to encourage this devotee, and he used to just behave to himself. Then one particular trip, Srila Prabhupada came back to New York. Bhakta John was missing. Bhakta John was just missing. And devotees did not know that Srila Prabhupada had noted him as well amongst the large group which was forming there. Srila Prabhupada did not ignore him just because he had issues. He did not ignore him because he couldn't act as Prabhupada would want him to because of his own issues. Srila Prabhupada immediately asked the temple president, saying, "Where is Bhakta John?" It was quite surprising. The temple president was quite surprised. "Where is Bhakta John?" Bhakta John, unfortunately, had committed suicide the week before. Srila Prabhupada was told by the authorities that Srila Prabhupada, Bhakta John, because of his problems with the mind, took his own life. He passed away. The authorities could immediately see Srila Prabhupada go into a trance. He went into a trance where he wasn't physically present in the environment. He was there, but he wasn't there. He wasn't there. He was there, but he wasn't there. He just got lost. And for a few minutes, Srila Prabhupada closed his eyes, and it appeared as if he was not in that particular area, even though physically he was present. When he opened his eyes, there were tears in his eyes, but the devotees asked him, "Srila Prabhupada," those days they did not know the etiquette of communication between the spiritual master and the disciple. The spiritual master closes his eyes, is in a trance, you don't go and ask him, "What is happening? What were you doing?" You know, they didn't know. They didn't know because they were quite innocent, and which was their virtue. So they asked him, "Srila Prabhupada, you know, what happened? What happened to you?" And Srila Prabhupada answered, "I requested Krishna to bring Bhakta John into a family of devotees." You see, this is the power of being connected to this movement, where we have keepers. The moment we leave, we have people to take care of us. Devotees, I can share this for someone who is not connected to this devotional service, even if they belong to a pious family, and I'm talking about Vedic India, pious family Hindus, they struggle to find a body. They struggle to find a body after leaving the bodies. They struggle. They literally struggle. It takes years to get a material body. When the Bhagavatam says that material birth is quite rare, it means the karmic circumstances of birth is quite rare. It is difficult for us to fit in into the specific karmic pattern that we need to execute for us to move forward, because Varnashram is not established. No one can be classified into this is who they are. They are Kshatriya, Brahmana, Shudra, Vaishya. People find it difficult to take birth in proper families. It takes years to come into this world after one leaves. There's tremendous problems once they leave here. This is how dangerous it is in this particular world now, because it's very complex. Devotees, on the other hand, we have a priority entrance. The spiritual master who we are connected to, Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we immediately get an opportunity, because most of our life is already established in a certain pattern. Most of our life is already established in a certain pattern. We have a pattern of behavior. We come, we attend pujas, we attend service, we chant. So the pattern of what is expected of that soul is already established to a large extent. It is easy for the demigods to find a place for us in a devotee family. Please understand the distinction. It is very difficult. If you can get lost with a physical body in this world, can we get lost in a big amusement park as a child? Can you lose a child? The answer is yes. If you leave your body, you're a soul, subtle body. It's a vast universe. You can get so lost. You can get so lost. It's unbelievable. It's very complex. Do not underestimate the connection that we have with this movement. The more and more and more we reinforce this connection, the greater the opportunity for us in the subsequent path. The less attached we are to this movement, the more distant we are from the practice of devotional service, the more complex it is going to be in terms of a transition. Be very clear about what we are doing here, because this is practically establishing a pattern which requires that we come and we are very regular with this. This is an extraordinary opportunity. It is not an ordinary opportunity. This is lifetimes planning. This is basically planning where for several lifetimes you are going to have an opportunity to engage in devotional service. At the very least, we are going to be in the Sangha of devotees, and which is wonderful. We are going to engage in service with Srila Prabhupada's movement. At the very least. What else could one expect? That either you go back to Krishna or you continue serving Srila Prabhupada. In both cases, it's wonderful. Isn't it? You establish a pattern. They recognize the karmic pattern. They recognize the residual karmic reactions. They take account of all of this. Plus you have people to intervene, saying, this is mine, this soul is mine. The spiritual master who is powerful has the ability to intervene. This soul is mine. Don't intervene. He can't go anywhere. He must continue, or she must continue. The spiritual master has the power to intervene. We are extraordinarily, extraordinarily fortunate. This is the greatest good fortune a soul could ever hope for. And there's a big distinction. There's a big distinction between what goes on here and what goes on outside. Very, very big distinction. We do not belong to this world. In one sense, we are proceeding to an eternal direction. In the other sense, our path is already established, because this is where we are putting our energies into. Okay? Now, we want to talk a little bit about anishtita bhakti. There are four causes primarily of anarthas. There are four causes. Shastra says, Dushkrutota is one type of anartha. This comes from sinful reactions. If we have sinful reactions from the previous lifetime, they can cause issues in this present lifetime in executing devotional service. We can have challenges. We can have serious challenges simply because of sinful reactions. We have past patterns. We go back to those past patterns. We kind of have inclinations which are not proper. This is from sinful reactions, dushkrutota. This causes a disturbance. It causes a disturbance. Basically, anarthas exist for most part in passion and ignorance. Understand it. Anarthas exist for most part in passion and ignorance. This is dushkrutota. If we chant sincerely, all the dushkrutota can be eradicated. The holy names completely remove all the sinful reactions. This is dushkrutota. All sinful reactions are removed. Past patterns can be removed completely by the holy names. Completely. Everything can be removed by the potency of Krishna's names. This is dushkrutota. The second category of anarthas is sukrutota. Because people have engaged in pious activities in the past, they accumulate wealth, they accumulate fame, they are beautiful, sometimes they have a lot of power, they are in good positions and so on. This also causes anarthas. There are serious anarthas that come by because of pious activities as well, because this person is not really feeling the intensity of wanting to participate in devotional service. They are born into devotional service, but they have facilities. Because of their facilities, their seriousness doesn't come. There is no seriousness. There is no intensity. There is no material exhaustion. Now I want to ask you a question. This is question time in between, so that everybody can wake up. Yeah? Now, the question that I want to ask is, why would someone who is very wealthy and famous have problems in executing devotional service, even if they are devotees? They can potentially have problems. Potentially. I want you to think in terms of the modes. I want you to think about what we shared since yesterday. Why would someone with enormous wealth or more wealth than necessary and complex arrangements, why would they suffer and struggle with devotional service? Yes, Prabhu. They have false pride, yes. I want you to... It can cause obstacles. Yes, that is one. You can reinforce an identity which is away from Krishna consciousness. You can reinforce an identity of I am the CEO of a company, I am the managing director of a company, I am this and I am that, I am the owner of a big business. This is an identity. This is a false identity. It is naimittika. And whenever you want to understand duty, duty comes from establishing an identity. I act as a father because I have established an identity of being a father. First you establish an identity and then duty comes. Dharma is realized after the identity. So as a consequence, when we establish identities in the world that are disconnected from Krishna consciousness, we establish duties in the world that are disconnected from Krishna consciousness. While performing those duties, a greater and greater amount of samskaras, impressions on the consciousness, can come about, which will reinforce these false identities. Why did Lord Chaitanya refuse to meet King Pratap Rudra? He refused to meet King Pratap Rudra because the identity of a king is an enormous, enormous burden. You're treated as God in your country. And you have the power of God. You can say, kill him. You know? Or you can say, I don't want him to die. Remove the death sentence. The power of a king is so enormous that he can play God. And when someone is playing God in that particular position, there's a reinforcement of that identity by those actions. And that dharma, which develops according to the identity they have established. It is difficult for them to move away from that reinforced identity and establish themselves in the identity of Krishna's servant. It is difficult to make that transition because every day someone is reinforcing you. You're sitting on a throne. So yes, false pride is surely a problem. But I want this to be understood in a more simplified way in terms of the modes. Why is it that when you have too much resources, it's a problem? In one sense. If you want to answer me in terms of the modes of nature, please. There's a tendency to enjoy them, yes, but in the modes. I want you to just say why in the modes. Because if you have a large amount of resources and you have a large empire, you have a large house with too many things going on, with a lot of debt and a lot of complex arrangements, you cannot be in goodness. You will need passion to manage that. You need to be passionate and you need to be in the mode of passion to manage large enterprises. You can't manage large enterprises in this world by the mode of goodness. You can't. You can't be situated in a calm, quiet, nice, detached manner when you have a lot going on around you. It's difficult. There are instances of devotees who ran entire empires, but they were Bhava Bhaktas. Ambarish Maharaj ran an entire empire and he did not participate in day-to-day activities. So who was managing the day-to-day activities in the kingdom? The Sudarshan Chakra. The Sudarshan Chakra was managing the entire activities of the kingdom. He was Kala himself. He was sitting on top and he was managing everything. He was managing. He is the time factor. The time factor, the material time factor, the cause of time and events proceeding in time, it depends on the Sudarshan Chakra. The Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord is going to handle that. Every mantra has a weapon. Okay? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The weapon is the Sudarshan Chakra. So when he was chanting and he was a Bhava Bhakta, the weapon of the Lord was managing the entire kingdom. He was the time factor. Jai Shri Shri Panchatattva Bhagavan ki. So he was managing the entire kingdom. It was being managed. This is a transcendental situation. But in the material universe, when we are here, for most part, if you have a complex arrangement, you're going to need passion. When you need passion, you're going to drop from goodness to passion. Devotional service will become very difficult. You will sit for some time and you will chant two rounds. I can't sit. Let me walk and chant. You will get up, take the beat back, you will walk. Oh, I'm walking for some time. Let me sit down again. And then you will chant. This is passion. This business of becoming very unsettled will start happening where the person cannot consolidate Krishna consciousness. They are fighting anarthas. In their mind, they are constantly pushing things away. This is not working out. That is not working out. This thought, go away. This thought should go away. I need to be steady. This is going on when there is passion. When the passion and ignorance is pushed out and one situates themselves in the higher mode of goodness, at that point in time, they are able to consolidate the chanting of Mahamantra. They advance quite quickly. This is Nishtha. Yeah, they become Naistiki Bhaktas. They become fixed in devotional service. Becoming fixed requires the mode of goodness. Having too much to happening can cause issues. It does not mean it is impossible. It simply means it is not for everybody. Aspiring for great amount of wealth, aspiring for fame, aspiring for all kinds of things is the cause of great disturbance, because none of this can be managed easily in the mode of goodness, and it will cause issues. It will cause issues. Simplicity is the way of life for devotional service. The more simple we are, less demand material energy places on us, greater the ability to chant. Brahmanical life is simple life. Why is it called simple life? If your psychology is a Brahmana, simple life necessary. You can't remain simple with complex arrangements. External arrangements can't be too complex. If you need to handle 100 things, we can't remain simple. It is going to cause passion to come, and once passion comes, sadhana is over. It is over. Guaranteed. Because then we will start desiring in the world. When we start desiring in the world, those desires won't be fulfilled, because that is the nature of desires in the world. And once those desires are not fulfilled, we are going to become frustrated. And passion will turn into ignorance. And anger will come. Then we will start saying, I struggle, I am a part of the Sangha, I serve Krishna, I am chanting 16 rounds, yet Krishna, you are not doing your job. I am struggling. Krishna is doing his job. You are struggling because you are in the modes. The deeper and deeper we go into the modes, the struggle will increase. This is passion. Be very careful in wanting things. There's nothing worse than someone who comes into this movement and starts asking for things which are not necessary. There's nothing worse than that. This is anartha. This is things which are not required. There are no safe desires, devotees. There are no safe desires. There's nothing safe about this world. There's only danger. There are no safe desires. What are the desires that you can have in this world? The Panchanga Bhakti are the only desires you can have in this world. If one desires that for the next 50 years, 40 years, I'm 20, I'm 25, I'm 30, for the next 40 years, as long as I'm in this body, I want to engage in Sadhu Sangha, I want to chant and I want to hear Bhagavatam, those desires would be granted, and along with those desires, there would also be resources for such a life. It is unfortunate if we think that Mahamantra does not have the capacity to protect us and to sustain us. We need to have the ability to accept the arrangement made by the Mahamantra. We are calling upon Krishna. Krishna is going to come and change the environment. There's no doubt. And when he changes the environment for us, the time factor changes, our life changes, everything changes. We need to accept it. This is humility. This is where Trinadapi Sunichena comes in. Trinadapi Sunichena Tarori Vasayishnuna Amani Manadena Kirtane Sadahari. Kirtane Sadahari requires Trinadapi Sunichena. We need to accept life as it is and try and make adjustments for us to be able to move forward. Desire Panchanga Bhakti, life will change. Desire Panchanga Bhakti, life will change, because Krishna will make arrangements for us to engage in Panchanga Bhakti. If we only desire Panchanga Bhakti, life is very smooth, because Krishna will make those arrangements. We need to have humility to accept those arrangements. We need to have the tolerance to accept those arrangements and then understand that this is Krishna's arrangement. This is humility. Then we can chant Kirtaniya Sadahari. If you're constantly going to fight in this world, then that's a different story. If you accept, things can move forward. So the third part, I'm going to finish today with the third and the fourth parts of anarthas. The third part of anartha is aparadokrita. Prabhus and Matajis, you can take out every sinful reaction by chanting the holy names. Every sinful reaction for millions of lifetimes. You can take out positive and negative sinful reactions, all of them. You can completely be free of all karma by chanting Harinam. If there is Nam Aparad, where will we go for clearing our karmic reactions? We can't do anything. The real problem with devotee lives is Aparad. If there is Seva Aparad, and Aparad is committed to the deities, Nama will remove the Seva Aparad. We can chant and remove the Seva Aparad. There are certain specific shrutis and prayers that can be chanted and offered to the deities which can remove Seva Aparad. Nama can remove Seva Aparad. But if there is Nama Aparad, where will we go? This is an extraordinarily important aspect, because if we commit Aparad to the Nam, then we have nowhere to go, because that is the mercy of the Lord. Nama is more merciful than Krishna. Nama is first established in the heart. Krishna comes after the fact. If Nama is cannot going to be approached, he cannot be approached because there is Aparad, then we need to worry. We need to worry. What is the first Nama Aparad which we chant? What is the first one? Vaishnava Aparad. Most dangerous. Devotee problems with passion and ignorance come due to Vaishnava Aparad. Sinful reactions cannot stand in the way of Harinam. Devotee problems are Aparad problems. Passion and ignorance in the devotee's life, confusion in the devotee's life, increase of desires for material energy, wrong desires come from Aparad. This is the source of Aparad. Aparad is the source. Aparado Krita is the biggest source of anarthas in this world. In the devotee community, we don't have to worry about sinful reactions. We don't have to worry about anything. We need to worry about Aparado Krita, because you can't resolve anything. If there is Aparad, nothing can be done. A Bhava Bhakta can fall down due to Aparad. What to say of us? A Bhava Bhakta can fall down, because we are in touch with material energy. We are in touch with material energy. Even though Jaya and Vijaya were impelled by the Lord's own potency to act and engage in a certain unprecedented manner towards the four sages, the Sanat Kumaras, there, one moment they acted and the sages became infuriated with Jaya and Vijaya, Lord Vishnu, it is said, he comes down from his seat and he forgot to wear his shoes. Lord Vishnu comes down from his seat when the aparad is happening and he forgot to wear his shoes. He comes down and he says to the sages, he even forgot to wear his shoes. In other words, he was in such a hurry to save his servants from this aparad. He comes down. He even forgets his shoes. He comes down and he tells the sages, the reason this happened, dear sages, is because they forgot me. The reason this happened is because they forgot me. It is when we forget Krishna that we forget who is standing in front of us. Nam Aparads, first Aparad, Vaishnava Aparad, is the most dangerous of all Aparads. Our problems are tied to Vaishnava Aparad. There is no way for a devotee to be struggling with passion and ignorance unless there is Aparad. Once there is Aparad, what is the 10th offense in chanting of the holy names? What is the 10th offense? Having material desires in spite of receiving so many instructions on the glories of the holy name. The 10th offense of having material desires while practicing devotional service occurs because there is Nam Aparad. And this is Vaishnava Aparad. If Vaishnava Aparad has happened, it is a matter of time before Guru Aparad will happen. It is just a matter of time. Vaishnava Aparad will lead to Guru Aparad. It is just a matter of time. Because consciousness starts falling. You see? And consciousness starts falling, one would start acting in mode of ignorance and passion. They will have no protection. In fact, devotees, if someone is committing an aparad, Nam Aparad, very specifically Vaishnava Aparad, it means that they have already come out of protection. How does aparad happen? Can aparadh happen like this, just like that? Sometimes we say it happened like this, it was impulse. It has been happening in the mind for a long time. It has been happening in the mind for a long time. We have already been cursing people. We have already been angry with people. We have already upset in the mind for a long time. And then it very automatically comes out in terms of words. It very spontaneously comes out in terms of words because it is already in the head. So this problem has already started long back. The creeper of bhakti has already become weakened. If Bhakti Devi is coming from the heart of a devotee, why would Bhakti Devi stay in our heart if you're offending devotees? If Bhakti Devi is given from bhakti, and that bhakti is in the heart of a devotee, why would she stay in our hearts? She wouldn't. She will leave, and this causes issues. Devotee issues are aparadh issues, and aparadh causes the devotee to go into passion and ignorance. Once they go into passion and ignorance, they're already acting according to the outside world. I want this, I want this, I want that, I want that. They are getting deeper and deeper into passion and ignorance. They're getting frustrated. And it is very miserable for a devotee to move from devotional service to the outside world. It's a miserable platform because they have high consciousness, they have received a lot of knowledge, and because they have received a lot of mercy and knowledge, they would find life outside amongst everybody else even more difficult. It's a fact of life. So what is the solution for Namaparad? The solution for Namaparad, according to Shastra, is to start with the Vaishnav who has been offended. We basically fall at the lotus feet of the Vaishnav begging for mercy. This is the recommendation of Shastra. If we do not know who the Vaishnav is, we beg Lord Chaitanya for mercy. This is the reference from Shastra as well. We call upon Harinam. We again come back to Nama, taking shelter of Lord Chaitanya, saying, I don't know whom I have offended. That is the reason why I don't have any taste. That is the reason why I'm struggling with reading. That is the reason why I have lost any interest in associating with devotees. That is the reason why I have no greed. I have no interest whatsoever. Dear Lord Chaitanya, please forgive me. I don't know whom I have offended for me to go and beg forgiveness. Please indicate to me. You call upon the holy name and you beg with intensity. Lord Chaitanya responds. This is a Shastric conclusion as well. It's a dangerous platform. If we are in touch with Krishna, and there's so much power in this movement, the opposite can occur. We are in touch with a 5,000 watt, a 10,000 watt line, and if we are in touch with a line which is so powerful, we can either get a lot out of it or we can get electrocuted, because it's a very powerful electricity line. You come in touch with it, you can either get a lot of power and you can lighten the whole world, or you get electrocuted. It is both possible. Both are possible. It takes lifetimes for devotees to resolve aparadh. It takes lifetimes. What did we read in Srimad Bhagavatam? It takes lifetimes for devotees to resolve aparadh. It takes lifetimes. We should never ever think that it is an easy process this way. We can't move forward if there's aparadh. Repentance after committing aparadh is one thing. Being careful is another. Who is the man who would commit aparadh? Who is the mad person who would want to throw away everything they have? It is said that you become mad, you will take everything in your house and you throw it out into the streets. Yeah? People don't know the value of things in their house, they throw it out to the streets. You know, throw this out, throw that out. They want to empty the house. They are mad. They have lost their composure, they have lost their mental ability. As a consequence, they throw everything out. Who is this mad person? This mad person is someone who does not have much to lose anyways. They haven't gained much. Because they haven't gained much, they have a tendency to lose things very easily. If you have gained a lot from Harinam, you will hold it on to your heart as if your life depends on it. If you have gained nothing, you act as if you have nothing and you lose everything. And you lose a lot more. That's also logical. The last form of anartha comes from devotional service. The last form of anartha comes from devotional service. This is all a part of anishtita bhakti. This is all a part of setting up impermanent goals in this world. What happens when there are anarthas? When there are anarthas, we set up impermanent goals. We start engaging in dharma, which is based on those goals. We establish identities which are impermanent. Our entire life changes based on that. Have you seen devotees come into devotional service and then leaving for some other minor form of religion. Have you seen it? We have. Why do they do that? Why do they go away from pure devotional service to a platform which encourages karma yoga? And they also convince us that philosophically it is the same. Why do they do that? This philosophical distortion that happens in the head happens due to aparad. It happens due to aparad. It happens due to aparad. It is not due to any wonderful logic. It is not because anything out there. Our spiritual master, His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, used to say that he was really a seeker. If someone could have proved that there was something better than Krishna consciousness, he would have taken it up. Nobody could show that. Because this was what, it was the most supreme process that was given. And as a consequence, he took it up. So the point which I'm trying to make is, we are seekers in that way. But our confusion and people leaving and saying there's something better out there and there's something else which is going to be given is because of aparad. Yeah. The environment has turned toxic and they leave, this aparad. Steady devotional service is to be appreciated. If someone has been around for many, many years, please understand that person, he or she is very fortunate. They are very fortunate. They have been with the movement, they are consistent, they are a part of the movement, despite all struggles. This is very, very good fortune. The fourth category of aparad comes from bhakti itself. And this happens at a much later stage, as higher and higher mode of goodness also occurs. And Bhakti Devi expands her mercy in the heart of the devotee gets recognition, the devotee becomes attractive, he or she attracts people, there's a big following, there's a lot of fame, there's a lot of puja and pratishta, and automatically there's false pride. This is the last one. This is the last big, big snare, and if you can survive this, you can survive anything. Because if you can't survive this, you go back to starting all over again, and this is what happens. Bhakti Devi bestows the person with all kinds of opulences. Bhakti can give you opulences. Bhakti can give you facility. And the person starts thinking, this is mine. One should learn to leave pride wherever it began. If pride comes in a place, leave it there and walk away. Yeah, don't carry it. Let it grow there so that the devotees can be helped. Yeah. What do you mean by that? Meaning, if there is some situation where someone is recognized for their preaching, for their book distribution, for many different activities, for taking care of the deities, leave the pride in that kshetra. Don't carry it, don't broadcast it, don't advertise it. Don't market it outside. Don't talk about it. Because if you leave it in that kshetra, it will grow. And with that, the devotees there would benefit because you have basically contributed positively in their lives. So the good fortune of receiving fame can grow in the community so that they can basically benefit from it. The community can recognize that person's glories and they can take precept from that person. If the person carries the fame of recognition and goes around broadcasting it, then that causes problems and then he also loses his ability to maintain things. Everything in the material world is a resource. If you take it from one place, it will be lost in that place. You can only use it elsewhere. It is not unlimited. You can't see it, but it is still not unlimited. It's like wallet. You know, you have a few dollars, you put a few dollars here, if you take those few dollars away and you put it elsewhere, it's going to go. It's going to be going away from that. One should learn to walk away. One should learn to walk away. If it grows there, it is fantastic. If it doesn't grow there, it is fine. Being recognized is not a problem. Recognition is good. Fame is good. Resources are good. Anyone who is serious in devotional service also understands we don't want to walk away from resources. You know, that is stupidity. We don't want to walk away from resources because resources can be used in the service of Krishna. But the same resources can also cause issues. There can be all kinds of problems because if we start owning it, we start thinking it is ours, we start thinking it has come because of our good fortune, us, it's a problem. It's a problem. Then, we are desiring something other than Krishna. Krishna says very clearly through Srila Rupa Goswami, Anya Bilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Anabratam, Anukulyena Krishna Anushilinam Bhakti Ruttama. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilinam Bhakti Ruttama. Uttama Bhakti is to be free of all desires. That includes a desire for name, fame, recognition. This is very subtle. It is quite subtle in the life of a devotee. Even someone who is apparently shastric and advanced can have this problem because it is quite subtle. And they can't recognize it because it is subtle. It's a very subtle phenomenon. And this can only be resolved by Krishna's chanting, by the chanting of holy names. Harinam can take it out. It's a dangerous one because it can't be seen. Any enemy who can't be seen is more dangerous than one that can be seen. Yeah, if you can't see something, it's more dangerous. So quickly to summarize today, we spoke of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17. 1.2.17 Srimad Bhagavatam talks about unsteady devotional service. If it is talking about unsteady devotional service, it is wonderful because it is saying even if you are unsteady, even if you have problems in your heart, you are welcome. So the Bhagavatam is welcoming people all over the world. This is the message of Lord Chaitanya. Bhagavatam 1.2.18 is saying once major portion of unsteadiness is removed, it is removed by coming in touch with people who have deep faith and engaging in activities of devotional service. Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. Then Anartha Nivirtihi would take place and we would remove all the Anarthas, we'd become free of the problems of life. And the third verse of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.19 is clearly saying all the tamas and the rajas, passion and ignorance, once it is removed, the person is established in goodness. Now he is established in pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva. Then he begins to realize he doesn't belong to this world. He has an established address elsewhere. You see? If your bags are packed and you're waiting to get off a train station where people who love you are waiting to receive you, such a journey, even if it is difficult, is not a bad one. The train journey, if it is a difficult train journey, but the destination, you have people who love you and you're reaching some place where it is wonderful, you can take some hardship. You don't mind if the fellow passenger is problematic. You don't mind if the seat is uncomfortable. You don't mind if the food doesn't taste good. You don't mind if it is problematic, it is hot or cold, because people are waiting at the end of the journey to receive you, who love you. And the wonderful part is the destination is superior to anything that you have ever experienced. So that is life. The devotee life is most fortunate because we can keep our bags packed and we know that the next destination is wonderful, one way or the other. You see, no one can anticipate a transition, the devotees can. We can keep our bags packed. We can say we look forward to this because the next destination is wonderful. What am I going to do? I'm either going to go back to Krishna or I'm going to serve you, Srila Prabhupada. I'm going to continue what I'm doing in this lifetime. So what is my problem? I'll keep my bags packed. This is wonderful. Okay? So Anishtita Bhakti, we talked about four different types of Anarthas very specifically, not Anishtita Bhakti. There's a classification of unsteadiness, of behavior. We are talking about four types of Anarthas. And the four types of Anartha, we spoke about Anartha from sinful reactions, Anartha from pious reactions, Anarthas from Aparad, Anarthas from Bhakti. We said all can be eliminated by chanting of Harinam except Namaparad. And Namaparad is the most dangerous of all Aparad. Devotee life is filled with problems because they commit Namaparad. This is our process. And we also spoke very briefly about how one can get rid of Namaparad. So today we are touching upon and connecting unsteady devotional service with goals being set up in the material world by the devotee. Unsteady devotional service equals passion ignorance. There is passion, there is ignorance in the heart of the devotee. It causes unsteady devotional service. Same passion ignorance causes desires in the material world. The devotee establishes an identity which is not connected to Krishna. They establish dharma not connected to nitya dharma of wanting to cultivate themselves. And they start progressing towards this. This can cause problems for several lifetimes, not one. They can move away for several lifetimes. We have to be very careful in desiring. We conclude by saying that there are no safe desires. There's only Panchanga Bhakti. Desire Panchanga Bhakti and request Krishna so that we can remain in mode of goodness and we can proceed towards it. And that will give us an opportunity to establish ourselves. So we'll stop here for today's morning session. We'll see if there are any questions. Maybe one or two questions if we have time. Yes.
Earlier just wondering if they can give some examples of operas and things that we should stay away from.
Like some examples of daily things that could be opera that we shouldn't.
Well, firmly speaking, basically, the idea is that we need to understand that the devotee is the carrier of bhakti. And bhakti comes from the heart of other devotees. That is how she transfers herself to our heart. As a consequence, we look at devotees and we understand that that's whom we need to serve to increase our bhakti, which is the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. When the saintly devotees are served, bhakti increases because it is from their heart that we receive. So our plan should be very simple. We need to wake up and go to bed every night understanding that our business is to protect Harinam. If we plan life according to what is going to allow us to chant nicely, which includes serving devotees and also being able to chant, our life would be perfect. There really isn't any need for us to worry as devotees. There isn't. The only focus we need is Harinam. So I'm saying, instead of looking at 100 different things to manage, if we just focus on ensuring that japa is going to be good, and what is going to work for japa, and japa is going to be good if we serve devotees, japa is going to be good if we read Srimad Bhagavatam or hear Srimad Bhagavatam, it is the same, the effect would be the same, then we would have an ability to move forward with no problems whatsoever. So I think we need to simplify the objective so that we have just one thing to watch out for, is japa. If we offend devotees, japa is going to be a problem. If we observe that our japa has become difficult, start begging for mercy. That should be your attitude. Because that's an early sign of sickness. That's an early sign of disease that says something going wrong. Start begging for mercy because there's a problem going on somewhere. We need to reflect. It requires reflection. Yeah, it's like a symptom of disease. You had a question too.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the wonderful class, very illuminating. I had a question in regards of anarthas coming from the service, from devotional service. So you said that it produces puja, lava pratishta, and you said that these are the enemies that are kind of subtle or invisible. So it's hard to fight them as they are kind of, you cannot see them. But is it so that you cannot see it? Is it like that they are so subtle that you cannot see, or there are some signs that they are there for the person, not for the environment? I'm speaking about ourselves. So what are the early signs, how we observe that these tendencies? I'm just curious about.
Sure. It is all, the first point, the reason why it can't be found that easily is because the person is engaging in devotional service nicely. The person is broadcasting the message, they are engaging in devotional service, they are spreading the mission. In one sense, they are being used by Krishna to expand his mission. So that gives them a feeling that they are doing the right thing. As a consequence, they can't recognize it. They can't recognize that they are in the wrong place in the first place. That is the reason why it's subtle. It's because externally, everything seems to be going nicely. That's the first point. Now, that's the reason why they can't. The issue with subtlety, the issue with being able to not recognize or recognize our obstacles has to do with humility. My observation, my humble observation, and this is Shastric as well, is very simple. All problems start with japa. Regardless of who we are, if our japa is weak, we should understand there will be problems and they're just round the corner. We may have 100,000 followers, but if our japa is weak, the problem is just round the corner. It is just round the corner. Because japa has become weak, it will just be just a few years or a few months away that our problems would begin. So how do we recognize issues? We recognize issues by looking at our standard of japa. Are we really understanding it? And why am I saying so? When someone is chanting sincerely, they will develop humility in their hearts. And the humility in their hearts comes from detachment. It also comes because the heart becomes very soft. The detachment comes because they have established a spiritual identity. Because they have established a spiritual identity, when they are chanting sincerely, they are less attached to puja and pratishta and other, you know, wonderful paraphernalia that comes in this particular world. So that is the first point. Now, the second point is that along with that humility would also come a gift of compassion. Then they're able to see other people needing help. If they're humble and they see a lot of people in the world needing help, then they would say, Krishna, I can't do anything for them, but I want to help them because I have no power. Then Krishna steps in and blesses them with power. Krishna Shakti comes in. And he is able to do, or she is able to do, an amazing service. So the point is, when there is proper chanting, then the power to spread the mission of Krishna comes from humility and compassion, which are gifts of chanting. Then that is a safe platform for us to be in. If chanting is improper, anything and anybody, whoever he is, a leader, whatever be their stature, whatever be the ashram they are in, they have to worry, because this is just the first sign that problems are going to get bigger. Sure. Any other last point? Before tapasya gets in? Yeah.
I was wondering, like the transition process.
Mike, yeah, you just need to take a mic, Simon.
Okay. So the transition period of a soul going from one body to another. So in Bhagavatam it said, you know, Vishnudutas come, one is devotee, a pure devotee, otherwise Yamadutas come. But I've also heard that there's this period where the soul is disconnected from the body and they're kind of lost. And you also just mentioned they could get lost in the universe. So could you maybe say what happens after death, like for a soul, until they find a new body? It's a little technical, but...
Basically, the quick answer is... Excuse me. Devotees shouldn't worry so much about the transition. They should worry a lot about what is happening in the present and whether they can take care of the present. That's the first statement I want to make. Is we want to focus in the present. We want to be absorbed in devotional service. We want to wake up and understand that this is the last day on the planet. Let me do my best. Let me chant. Let me get absorbed. That should be the attitude of the devotee. They are taken care of. There is no issue with devotees. We do not want to imagine that they are going to have the same fate as the soul outside. For the soul outside, after the transition from this physical body, the next physical body takes time, and during that period of time, they wander. There's a wandering period. They just wander. They sometimes stick around families because they are attached to them. They simply do not know what it is. They possess family members. They stay in the body of family members because they are afraid. There are much bigger goons in the subtle area. A soul can get intimidated. Once they go there with a subtle body, they can get intimidated. You know, when I'm talking about, you know, people who are aggressive, they can be there. There are aggressive personalities even in the subtle world who can intimidate a somewhat pacified or a somewhat passive entity who has left the body. So they take shelter of families. They inhabit family homes. You know, I personally have a great fear of buying antiques because they get attached. Antiques, for example, they get attached to the antiques. They get attached to some table or some chair which has been in the family for years, which they have used. It's quite a frightening prospect as to how long it's going to take. If the ancestors are offered oblations, in Vedic society, we have the yearly ceremonies that are done. Devotees do not necessarily have to participate in this. There's a way to do it. But in general, if there are yearly services being done in Vedic society, then the demigods take charge of those souls. They come and pick them up wherever they are, because then there is some connection being made between the rituals versus where they ought to be, and they get help. If they are not helped in such ways, then there are huge problems. There are huge problems. There are huge problems because every building has people whom we can't see. Every building, practically. They're attached, they can't leave, they don't know where to go. They're frightened for most part. They're not frightening, they're frightened. And they cause nuisance to people who are on this plane. They cloud our mind, they cloud our thinking. It is commonly misunderstood. When someone passes away in a family, and if funeral rites are not done properly, if yearly offerings are not made, I am not referring to devotee families, I'm referring to outside. Don't get confused by the process of devotional service. The process of chanting can take care of many things. But the point which I'm trying to talk about is, if you are a Vedic member of Vedic society, why was it introduced? It's because if you are a son, and let us assume that four generations before you, there was a fellow in your ancestry line who was extraordinarily corrupt. And he engaged in all kinds of sinful activities. That fellow's consciousness is also on top of us. It invades us. At times it causes problems. There is a deeper layer of consciousness which can affect us, which is connected to the ancestry. So when yearly oblations are done, and there is something called tarpana, which is done. Tarpana literally means offering water to the and washing off. When that is being done in Vedic society, they are washing off the subtle effects on a monthly basis. This is done by Vedic brahmanas. I am not talking about devotees. We are taken care of by Harinam. We don't want to get confused by processes.
What about the Yamadutas then? You know, it's described as taking soul and taken to a life.
They don't interfere. They come for every instance unless they are connected to, it's connected to a devotee. The devotees, they don't intervene. They are not the ones who are supposed to come. They don't. The spiritual master takes charge. If the spiritual master is powerful enough to intervene, the spiritual master takes charge on leaving the body for devotees. He literally takes charge. That's why we inform the spiritual master. The spiritual master has the ability to intervene, to make arrangements, to intervene and say, I want this soul to be put in this body, in this particular family. The spiritual master can do that if he's powerful enough. It's a part of how they arrange things. Or he can just request that someone is approaching him, they're getting married, they want children, a soul who has left, can a disciple can be sent there to that particular family so that they can be looked after in certain ways. So, should we stop here with the ghosts, or is there anything more? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.